Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with Sigma Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to revisit a conversation that we had with Dr. John Lowry. John has been on our podcast twice. This is actually his first podcast that he did with us. He is a recognized authority on negotiation through his experience as a lawyer, management consultant, and entrepreneur. He has also worked in higher education. He wrote a book that has come out since this podcast. It's entitled Negotiation Made Simple. He's got some great thoughts to share that will be helpful in your career. Everybody negotiates, and I think he's got some really great advice that he's going to share today. Looking forward to today's conversation with John. It's great to have John joining us for our conversation today. I appreciate you taking some time out to talk to us.
Mark, I'm really honored to be on your program and excited about our conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess first off, can you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career overview?
Sure. So I grew up wanting to be a lawyer, and I had the opportunity to do that. Went to law school and went to work for a big firm in Dallas, Texas, and I was a litigator and got to spend my time and got all of that out of me in terms of wanting to be in that environment and do that kind of work. And it was absolutely wonderful. I love the competitiveness of it. But I also realized that as I was doing that, that by the time that disputes and problems that happen in business, in my case, it was all in healthcare. I was a healthcare litigator. By the time those rose to the level to where you're hiring outside lawyers to pursue litigation against, you know, a doctor or a business partner or a hospital, whatever the case might be, I realized it was really too late for there to be any salvaging of the relationship. And it just seemed like in the context of healthcare, there was a better way to handle conflict. And healthcare and all businesses, there is a cost to conflict. It manifests itself in a wide variety of ways, litigation just being one of them. But it also manifests itself in turnover, and employees leaving. Right now, that's a huge issue because it's really hard to find people. It manifests itself in just morale, creating a culture that is not a great culture that people want to be in and want to work in. And so what I learned was that the whole skill set that would determine my success or failure as a lawyer was not really my ability to argue an appellate argument in front of a court of appeals. That's what they teach you to do in law school, but very few lawyers ever actually get to do that. What most lawyers do is they negotiate resolutions to problems or they negotiate deals. And in learning that, I realized that there was a whole future out there in terms of being able to help people in a far more constructive way, a far more efficient way to really do the same thing. And that is to negotiate a resolution to whatever problem has emerged or negotiate a deal that allows the business or the organization to move forward. So I left the practice of law, went into higher education and started teaching a little bit and then started a consulting firm. And here we are, years later, and I have great fun kind of living a very diverse professional life where I get to advance a liberal arts institution here in Nashville and also get to work with clients across the country in terms of helping them kind of negotiate their next level of success.
Great. Yeah, and we're definitely want to jump into the topic around negotiation and the importance of it. And we have, as we mentioned before we got started, that a lot of our listeners are people that are starting out in leadership positions and also maybe first-time CEOs. One of the questions I love to ask our guests, knowing what you know now with all the things you've learned in your career so far, if you were able to go back and talk to a 22-year-old John, what advice would you give him?
Yeah, it's a great question. And working on a college campus, I get to talk to a lot of 22-year-olds that are getting ready to graduate and So they kind of ask. And I think one of the things that you learn over time, there's a lot of things that you learn, but I think the thing that really stands out for me is that when you get to a certain level of leadership, it's actually your peers that are responsible for promoting you, or it's your peers that will give you the opportunities to lead, or it's your peers that will ultimately allow you to be successful as a leader. And so many times when you're 22 years old, you're thinking about my company and my boss, and that's really the audience that you're playing to, if you will. And so many times, especially when people are in that role of being an individual contributor, they will develop the habit of being very competitive with peers. And as a result of that, there's a moment that happens in your career to where no longer is it about being competitive. It's about realizing how to be collaborative and how to lead and influence your peers. Because at the end of the day, once you move from that moment of being an individual contributor to now being a leader, your success isn't determined by you. Your success is determined by a team of people that you've been asked to lead. It's a wildly different skill set. And I sure would have benefited from someone kind of explaining that process to me at 22 years old as a young, hungry, competitive, young professional out there ready to conquer the world.
Sure. Yeah, that's some great advice. Is there any advice that you received early on in your career that you wish you, looking back on it, you wish you would have ignored?
Yeah, you know, the thing I hear sometimes, especially in business circles and dealing with people that are in the midst of conflict and having to put things together, is you'll sometimes hear things said. I don't know if it's advice necessarily, but it's certainly worth dismissing. I can tell you that much. Is when people say things like, well, it's just business, or it is what it is. And those kinds of things, I think they send a message that can be really damaging in terms of how people are trying to make things happen and how people are trying to lead others. At the end of the day, it's not just business. Harvard has a study out that talks about how commercial business decisions, they've studied these business decisions, and 70% of those decisions are based on emotion. Only 30% are based on some form of reason or analysis or logic. I mean, all the things we're taught in school, it only accounts for 30% of the decision. 70% of the decision is really based upon emotion. And the emotional trigger that's so key there, that's so interesting, is it's not how people feel about you. It's how people feel about themselves when they're with you, or they're working with you, or they're interacting or communicating with you. And so at the end of the day, even though it may be business that brings people together, it's never just business. The people components are always present, and they're very real.
Well, you've studied negotiation. You teach it. Things that you can do in negotiation that will help you kind of in overall in life.
I define negotiation as a strategic communication process to get a deal or to solve a problem. And so if you think about that, I have great fun when I'm working with people. I'll ask them, I'll say, you know, what percentage of your professional time? Like, think last week. Think back to every email, every voicemail, every meeting that you had, everything on your calendar, and just look at that for a week's time and tell me what percentage of your professional time do you spend engaged in a strategic communication process to get a deal or to resolve a problem. And most people will look at that and they'll reflect on it for a minute or so, and they'll come back with a number like 80%. Or 70%. It's almost always more than 50%. And then what I'll do is I'll ask them, I'll say, okay, you all are professionals here, highly educated people. Tell me, how many of you had a negotiation course as part of your formal training for your job? Or how many of you have been very intentional about pursuing a course of study in negotiation? it's usually less than 10% of the people have had any exposure to negotiation. And yet they all just recognize that literally it's 80% of what they do. And so whether you're running a small business, whether you're a new CEO, whether you're running a nonprofit, whether you're in sales, healthcare, it doesn't matter. Your professional life is consumed by this process. And what that means is your success is going to be dependent upon how well you negotiate through every single day. And lots of people, the way that they learn to negotiate is literally trial and error. And most people are pretty good at developing things through trial and error. That's why they've reached the level of success that they've reached. But unfortunately, there's been a cost to that because they've had to make all those errors in order to acquire that knowledge to then be successful going forward. And so one of the things that we try to do is to work with companies, work with sales teams, work with leadership teams, work with executives to where the learning curve doesn't have to be as costly for the business, where we can come in and provide a lot of different kind of training for people that's very contextualized to their world so that they can understand how they can be more effective as they're responding to that email where someone's fired up about something and they've got a problem to solve, or as they're trying to put that big deal together that's going to make the difference between the year being a successful year in the black or perhaps the year being a more challenging year in the red. And those are the kind of moments that really make or break it in terms of people's success. And yet what I find that's so ironic is a lot of people, they haven't spent a lot of time thinking about the process. They think about the substance, but they don't think a lot about the process. So the substance is easy. The substance, this question is all about what is the right answer? And a lot of people in their field, they know what the right answer is. They know how much this should cost and what a good price for whatever product or service you're looking at. They know how to go care for a homeless population in downtown Minneapolis. They know how to do some of these things that are really, really important work. The process question is the one that people tend to neglect, and yet I think it's the more important question. And the process question asks, how do I get other people to the right answer? And notice with me that if we're not very good at getting other people to the right answer then, it becomes irrelevant. It's no longer the right answer. And so what I want to encourage people to think about and where I found great joy in terms of drawing people's attention, and that is to think more intentionally and more seriously about the process that is used to carry on business. The word negotiation itself, it comes from the Latin root negotiatus. And that word is actually defined as to carry on business. So when we talk about negotiation, there's lots of people that are like, well, I don't negotiate. It's like, no. Like you're a business leader or you're an organizational leader. You don't call it negotiation, but it's what you do every single day. And so I enjoy and I encourage people to think more intently about the process that is used to accomplish the mission of your organization. That is going to be what is most significant in whether you're able to hit that next level of success and how quickly you do.
And I've read some of your blog, and one of the things you talked about is discovering your negotiation style. And I think there's probably, talk a little bit about that. What do you mean by that, and how do you discover that?
Sure. Yeah. Style is, it's fun to think about. We all have different styles. So for example, this is kind of fun to do on a podcast. You can do it with me, Mark. You'll be my student here for just a second. But fold your arms for me, just like this. I'll go high enough so I can get into the camera.
Sure.
Okay? All right. So yeah, we just, you know, we folded our arms. And audience, go ahead and do it. Fold your arms. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take the arm that is on the bottom and put it on top. You don't even know how to do it. You're like, how does it even can you figure out how to do it? There's probably a lot of folks that are wrestling with themselves right now. Okay. So how does that feel?
Uncomfortable.
It's awkward. It's uncomfortable. Okay. So yeah, go back to sitting normal. You won't be like, I hate this. Like, who is this guy? But yeah, so notice we all have a style, right? We have a way to do it. But here's the thing is that just like with folding our arms, there's another way to do it. And the thing about negotiation that is so challenging is that our intuition, while usually it leads us in the right direction, while usually it leads us to the right decision, in negotiation, it can actually lead us down the wrong path if we're not careful. And the reason is because our intuition tends to lead us to solutions or decisions that are comfortable. And many times in the negotiation process, we actually have to get uncomfortable. And we have to do what is strategic instead of doing what is intuitive. And so stylistically, people are going to naturally kind of know their style. The question is, are they willing and do they have the skill set to be uncomfortable if that's what strategy calls for? So for example, to kind of oversimplify it, there is a competitive approach to negotiation and there's a cooperative approach. Now, just philosophically, everyone's like, oh, I love the cooperative. Cooperative's wonderful. Like that's peace on earth kind of stuff. Like it's great to be cooperative. But the reality is that there are people like me out there who are competitive. And if you are cooperative and you take a cooperative approach into a negotiation with a highly competitive person, they will actually become more competitive trying to get more than they will become cooperative to try to reciprocate your willingness to give and your willingness to try to find this mutual agreement. And so there are moments where even if you want to be cooperative, even if it's the right thing to be cooperative, there are moments where you have to know how to be competitive because you're going to run into people who are competitive. And that may be uncomfortable. That may not be the way you want to do it. But strategy says you got to be dynamic and you got to be willing to do that. Otherwise, you risk being exploited. And so I think stylistically, in terms of discovering your style, it really comes down to thinking about, okay, when there's a moment, what is my instinct? Is my instinct, as I think about how to resolve this, am I thinking about me or am I thinking about we? And for the folks that are thinking about we, they're probably a bit more cooperative. And so they're going to have to think about how they might need to be a bit more competitive. The folks that are thinking about me, well, you're probably a bit more competitive and you might need to think about how to be a bit more cooperative because sometimes it's a whole lot easier to be cooperative than it is to be competitive, especially when you don't have any power. If you don't have any power in the moment, there is no point in being competitive. You will lose. And so your most strategic play is to be cooperative. And so the right answer is not, well, do I be competitive or do I be cooperative? The right answer is strategically knowing when you need to be cooperative or competitive and then having the skill set to be whichever one the strategy calls for.
So how much, when you're going into a negotiation, how much time do you spend as far as prepping for the negotiation? I think a lot of people probably wing it. They go into a meeting and they know kind of what they're hoping for, but talk through kind of some practical things you can do as far as in preparation for a negotiation.
Yeah, great question. So you use the word hope. I tell folks all the time, there's a great business book out there called Hope is Not a Strategy. Mm-hmm. It's true for negotiation as well. Hope is not a good strategy when it comes to negotiation. I also tell people, I say, if you find yourself in your preparation process saying, well, let's just see what happens. That's probably means you've got more work to do from a preparation standpoint if you're settling for the let's see what happens kind of approach. At the end of the day, you want to control the process as much as you can. And to do that, you have to intellectually be ahead of it in terms of where it's going. And where that happens is in the preparation. And so many people, they think about preparation as, well, I just need to have a good alternative in place and then I'll have leverage. And that's my preparation. So again, going back to what we talked about before, that's preparation on the substance, right? That's saying, okay, I'm going to try to influence the right answer to make it a stronger right answer for me. That process may or may not work in terms of the deal you're trying to put together. And so what I tend to do is to think more of, okay, how am I going to get the other side to this right answer? And by doing so, work through an entire process to where you're thinking about everything from how the dance is going to play out in terms of the concessions, thinking about your most important move, which is your very first move, to thinking about what are some of the other things that are going on around the deal that could influence the deal. What are some of the interests, those kind of intangible but important things that drive people, like their ego and their fears and those kinds of things? And then how do I get really creative with those? Spending a lot of time thinking about that kind of stuff and then being able to walk in empowered to be able to play a lot of different cards depending upon where the conversation goes, that's the best preparation. And that's where more time should be invested than probably gets invested in most negotiations, as you pointed out, Mark.
So what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes people make in negotiation?
Well, I think lack of preparation is one, which we just talked about. Mm-hmm. I think the other one really has to do with the opening offer. And I think what happens is people get nervous about the reaction to the opening offer. And what they do is they want information or affirmation in that moment. And yet what they often have to pay for in order to get that information and affirmation is they have to use all of their influence in order to get that. And what happens then is you're kind of nervous about, is this too much? I mean, I've got a negotiation today and I'm nervous about, am I asking for too much? Am I going to get run out of the place? But I also know that if I never ask for it, there's never a chance that I'll get it, right? And so I've got to start and then have a strategy to be able to say, okay, if I need to back off of it, I will. But I've got to test. I've got to see if it's there. And so biggest mistake that I see is that people aren't ambitious enough on the front end. And what that is really interesting, because they say, well, that's too competitive. That's too cutthroat. That's too shrewd. But the reality is it's actually cooperative. All right. So this is like the zen of negotiation. And this is what makes this process so entertaining, is when you actually start out more ambitious, you leave yourself more room to move. And so by leaving yourself more room to move, you create space to where you can be more cooperative and yet still end at a place to where you get a great deal. And the fascinating thing is, and we've studied this in kind of different ways over the years, but it's the folks that start out too cooperative and then they realize they don't have much to give, or they didn't engineer a process that gives them room to make concessions. And so they say, like, no, like, this is what it needs to be. And they use the word over and over again. I tell them, this is the really strategy. We're like, no, really, that's all I got. And they're like, oh, come on. No, really, that's it. And they're like, no, really, that's all I can do. And what's so interesting is here people are trying to be cooperative, but in the rigidity of not being able to move, they become perceived as very competitive. And so they literally create the opposite impression that they're trying to create because they've mismanaged the process. So biggest mistake is not carefully thinking through the opening offer and delivering an opening offer that sets the stage for a really effective negotiation to follow.
So walk us through maybe just an illustration, real life or made up, where just some of your processes that you teach and how maybe just a quick oversight. And we're just touching on the surface, I know, in this podcast, yeah, but give me a story of where some of the tools that you've used.
Okay, great story to tell. Let's see. Let me tell this story. So I was working with a small marketing firm. This firm does a lot of different kind of branding of spaces and things like that. And so CEO calls me. I remember I'm teaching out of Pepperdine. I'm driving to LAX down PCH. And he calls me and he's like, John, we've got the biggest deal in the history of our little company. And I'm trying to negotiate it. And I just need some help trying to get it to the finish line. I said, all right, so what are we talking about here? And so he describes this whole deal for me that they're putting together. And he says, you know, our competition, it's a two-man race at this point. It's down to us and our competition. And he says, they've undercut us on price. And so the client has called back and said, we would rather go with you all, but we need you all to deliver your scope of services for the price that the other firm is offering. And so he's like, I just couldn't do it. He said, that was going to suck all the margin out of the deal. And he's like, but at the same time, like, we really need this deal. This is going to help the company huge in terms of breaking into this industry. And so he's like, well, what do we do? And so it was one of those moments where I just began asking him questions, saying, okay, you're talking about going into a new industry. Tell me, what can this client do for you that adds value to where you can recover your margin back, even if you don't achieve it in this deal? And so he starts thinking and he comes up with 11 things right there on the call. And these were things in terms of, you know, joint press release and news conference. And, you know, it was a high profile client, so they would be able to garner the attention.
Sure.
And so he identified all these things and he was like, if we got all of those things, I'd do the deal in a minute. I was like, all right, well, go put them on the table and say, you're able to accomplish what they want you to accomplish in terms of the pricing, but you'll only do that, and here's the big word, huge word in negotiation, is if they're willing to do these 11 things to help your firm. And if they're not, then, you know, you've got to make a hard decision about whether you want to do the deal or not. But if they do the 11 things you just said, I'd do that deal in a heartbeat, because that would totally pour fuel on the fire in terms of what my firm's trying to do business-wise. And so we thought, and he was optimistic, that out of the 11 things that he would get 5 or 6. And he's like, I think that's probably a win if we get 5 or 6. And so he pitched them, called me back the next day, and he's like, we got all 11. And he's like, we did the deal. And so it was in those moments where it was really the CEO that was the hero in all this. He was the one that kind of figured it all out. All he needed was just a little help in terms of thinking about where to add value and how to create more value in the deal that would allow both sides to have their interests met. And so, you know, as a result of that, this firm is doing a ton of work in that industry, because of kind of this breakout moment. But that's the key in terms of, again, thinking about not just what is on the table, not just the tangible things that we're discussing, but going and thinking about what are some of those intangible things that in this particular case cost that client nothing to deliver, right? Putting out a joint press release didn't cost them a thing. That was, you know, one person spending a couple of hours reviewing it, making sure it was okay in the PR shop. That's it. That's all it cost them. But for this firm, it was huge, right? Because that endorsement to launch them into a new market meant millions and millions and millions of dollars. So fun little story from the business world there that thankfully that CEO and that company used a little something and it made a big difference for them.
So I'm sure there's some people say, you know, I love to negotiate, but I'm sure there's some listeners are like, you know, it almost feels a little like I'm looking out just for myself. You know, they might feel a little like after they're done negotiating, I don't feel good about kind of what happened. Yeah. Others are like, how could you even feel that way? My wife is like that. She leaves the room if I'm trying to negotiate something, for buying a vehicle or whatever. But talk a little bit about that. Just, you know, the different personalities and the negotiation piece of it.
Yeah. So I think some of that's cultural, right? Like you're in Minneapolis, Mark. I think Minneapolis is the home to Target. And, you know, if you go through Target, and you're checking out at Target, let's say you're buying some toothpaste and your toothpaste costs $3.99, all right? And it goes through the little checker thing and it comes up on the screen, $3.99, and you got a whole mess of people behind you in the checkout line. You look at the lady and you're like, you know, wait, $2.50? I got $2.50 cash right now for the toothpaste. What do you think? Like, the person be like, are you crazy? Like, it's $3.99. Like, that's what the machine says. Like, pay the $3.99 or get out of everyone's way. Like, culturally, we don't give ourselves the space here to negotiate like it's done in other cultures, where people are negotiating everything. And so because people are negotiating everything, they're much more comfortable with it. Whereas here in the United States, we don't negotiate everything. And so for many of us, it's not a process we use regularly. And so it's a process that we're less comfortable with, which is why we like feel icky in terms of like, I can't believe they tried to rip us off. You know, they said they wanted $20,000 for the car, but we bought it for $18,000. Like, can you believe that? And you're like, yes, of course. That's the process. That's how it works. But some people are totally offended. But here's what I found, Mark, that's so interesting. That is especially for folks up in Minnesota. You know, winter comes and it gets kind of cold up there and snow comes and you know, you all have this moment where you're like, I would like to see the sun. The sun would be a beautiful thing. So, you know, you and your friends, you go down to the Caribbean and you get on a big white boat and you go sailing around the Caribbean in the sunshine and it's a wonderful vacation. And then, you know, you get off the boat at some port of call and whatever port of call it is, you're going to get off that boat and there's going to be a ton of vendors that are right there ready to welcome you to whatever that island is, right? And those vendors, they're going to have a bunch of little shops and carts and things like that where they're selling a bunch of stuff. And it's usually not stuff that you need. It's usually things that are trinkets and all this kind of stuff. But it's absolutely fascinating to me because people will be like on one of the most beautiful places on the planet and they'll never see it. You know why? Because they're shopping the entire day. And as they're shopping, they're going through this process to where like the, you know, the person's going to be selling the necklace and they're going to say, oh, it's $50 for this necklace. Be like, no, I'm not paying you. I got $20 cash right now. And all of a sudden you're going to buy that necklace for $30. And you know what's like the dinner topic that night when you get back on the ship and to dinner, you're going to be wearing that necklace. You're going to be so proud of it. Not because it's a beautiful necklace, but because you're proud of the deal. And so what I find is that so many people in one context, they're like, oh, negotiation. I don't want to do that. That's uncomfortable. But you put them in another context right, and they absolutely love it. And they do a great job of it. So it kind of depends on what your context is and what your perspective is.
Absolutely. So are there books that you recommend to leaders that you'd put on your top list?
Yeah. So as far as the negotiation book, I think the best one out there is a book called 3D Negotiation by a couple of Harvard Law professors. That's a really strong book, more academic. I've got a book coming out next year that I'm really excited about. And so that is in process. So there'll be a new negotiation book that I'll encourage people to look for next year. And then another book out that I think is a really, really good book in terms of helping people understand kind of the people component of business is a book called Story Brand by a guy named Don Miller. And Story Brand is a book that really looks at the elements of story and then applies it to business and marketing and sales. And basically, Don makes the argument that so many of us, we put ourselves in the wrong role of the story. We put ourselves as the hero, and that all of our clients and customers and the people that we're serving in our nonprofits, they really don't want a hero. They want to be the hero. We all want to be kind of our own hero, our own story's hero, right? Like, that makes perfect sense. But what they need is a guide. And that's what Don identifies that's so powerful, is to say, how do you be the best guide? And that's all I'm trying to do in terms of the negotiation process for people, is just simply be a guide to help them make good decisions, to kind of give them a path to where they can be successful. But it was really the Story Brand book that was so helpful to me in having clarity on that proper role in terms of coming alongside people and trying to make a difference in their lives.
Great.
And then the last book, which is just kind of a fun book, this is a book that I'm sure no one's ever heard of, but it was a book that I thought was really interesting from a business standpoint. And it's a book called Shoemaker of Dreams. I don't even know if it's published in the United States, to be honest with you. But I was in Italy, and I was in a hotel room, and there was a book sitting on the table there. And I started reading this book. It's the autobiography of Salvatore Ferragamo, the shoemaker. And it's his story about growing up in this little Italian village. And he, from the time he was very young, loved shoes and loved making shoes. And the problem he had was that being a cobbler, it didn't bring his family the best social status in terms of him being a cobbler, but that's what he wanted to do. And his parents were like, oh, no, you need to do bigger than that. He's like, no, I just want to make shoes. And so it wasn't until he made his sister a pair of shoes, I think for a baptism or something, that his parents realized he had a gift for making shoes. And then it chronicles his journey all the way to the United States, to where he just brings this incredible passion for making shoes and finds himself in Hollywood, makes some shoes for some celebrities, and then his career takes off to where he builds one of the biggest shoe companies in the world. So an incredible business story for people that from a book that you've probably never even heard of.
Yeah, that one I have not had listed on our read list. So we'll see if that's even available. And yeah, definitely we'll have to have you come back on once your book comes out. Definitely looking forward to that. So outside of work, what do you do to recharge?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, with three kids, there's not a lot of life outside of work that doesn't involve kind of supporting them and all that's going on. I do like to try to get out on the boat a little bit. And my wife makes fun of me because I actually like working on it almost as much as I like being out on the water. And so when I get the opportunity, I'll sneak up to the lake and play around with the boat and all that kind of stuff. And those are good hours when I get to spend those just doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Any parting advice that you would give to a newer up-and-coming leader?
I think it's just kind of an affirmation of what we talked about here today a little bit. I think success results from successful negotiation in almost all cases, whether it's success in business or success in managing people or success in running a nonprofit. I mean, all of that negotiation is going to be core to that venture and to people's leadership being successful. And so I think that's just an important thing to remember, is that success will almost always result from successful negotiation.
So how would somebody learn more about some of the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. So LowryGroup.net, LowryGroup.net That's the website that has information to all of our online courses, some of our free downloadable materials, some of the live courses that we have coming up. And so that is the best way to find out more information about what we're doing and some of the things that we have to offer that will be a guide and help people manage this process more effectively.
Well, thanks so much for being on the program. I know this will be helpful. I encourage everybody to check out your website. There's some great information there, and wish you continued success.
Good deal. Thanks, Mark. Great being with you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.